So we have an Afrikaans, we speak in South Africa, we say Vrydag is my dag. Friday is my day.
Yes, it's a good concept.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Rhinoplasty Podcast with me, Dr. Cameron McIntosh. We are in season 3, so we're doing live face-to-face recordings, and I'm managing to track down these guys who I haven't been able to track down at the Berlin meeting. We're here in Berlin at IMRS, the Global Masters meeting, and finally, I have one of the Brazilian legends. Ishida, welcome to today's episode of the Rhinoplasty Podcast.
Nice to be here, Cameron.
It's great, man. So how come you've come all the way from Brazil to come here?
I didn't get the question.
How come you've gone all the way from Brazil to come to Europe? Because you live a great life in Brazil. Why do you want to come to Germany?
Oh, yes,
eh?
It's a very important meeting. We have this European and American Society of Rhinoplasty. Yeah. I must be part of it. So,
now, Ishida, tell the listeners, because it's listened to all over the world, this podcast. Where do you come from and what do you do?
So I'm a Brazilian. I look like Japanese, but I'm a Brazilian.
Okay.
My four grandparents are Brazilian.
Wow.
So my father is a surgeon, plastic surgeon.
Yes.
He's retired now.
Yeah.
And I was into plastic surgery since I was born. Like I was always looking at these pictures. And seeing, and I was always wanted to be a plastic surgeon, and especially a rhinoplasty surgeon.
Yes. So
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. And your kids, do you think they're going to do plastic surgery?
Oh, no. One is already doing engineering.
Yeah.
And the other one's perhaps going to do architecture.
Yeah. Because the other famous Brazilian family, the Patrocinios, who also like this mafia of rhinoplasty surgeons.
And there's the Prado Neto also. They have three plastic surgeon sons.
Really?
He's a rhinoplasty guy. And his three sons are doing plastic surgery already.
So I know you also, we're going to get into the plastic surgery and the rhinoplasty just now, but I know you're quite an active, sporty kind of a guy. What do you do?
Oh, I like a lot of things. I surf.
Yeah.
I skate.
Yeah.
And dive.
Wow.
Dive with sharks.
Yeah.
Hopefully. And what else? And jog, of course.
Yeah. But you're also running a plastic surgery department, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, actually, I'm the coordinator of the rhinoplasty group in the University of São Paulo.
Yeah? Wow. And what does that entail?
We have a group. There's a faculty. There's the Department of Plastic Surgery that the chief is Hof Gemperli.
Yeah.
And they are subdivided. So
okay.
I've got the rhinoplasty group. It's very interesting because we have almost 9 residents.
Yeah.
And we have always 2 or 3 of them rotating at the same time.
Already, eh? Sure. Now tell me, like globally over the last few years, there's this whole thing about preservation rhinoplasty. But in South America, it's not new to you guys.
No. We've been doing, like we have 2 groups, basically.
Yeah.
We have one,
otolaryngology,
otolaryngology, ENT group that has been doing Koto technique for like forever, like more than 30 years. And my father developed a cartilaginous push down in 99, 25 years ago.
Wow.
That we've been doing since then.
Wow.
So, and you are talking about in the meetings and everything, but only after 2016 they start growing up the preservation rhinoplasty thing.
So explain to the listeners about the Ishida technique and also like Miguel Ferreira. How did he get involved in this thing? I'm interested to know.
Oh, this was a little bit unfortunate for him because he's a very genius guy. And we have described the cartilaginous push down, and he was unaware of it.
Yeah.
And in 2019, I think almost 20 years after, he published something very similar.
Yeah.
Then he got to know that we had published this before.
Okay.
That it's pair A, but it's not the same. It's but it's the same philosophy. And the worst thing happened is that I published a paper in 2020 And then, but one subject that he was thinking also, so he published almost the same thing, but included my name. He was very kind. And just 1 year after.
But, wow, eh?
So it was kind of, but the ideas are a little bit different. It's not the same thing. But.
So explain to the listeners from your side, what exactly is this technique?
Oh, it's very interesting. I'm going to tell you a story.
Yeah.
My father had a patient in the private office. I was in practice with him already. And this was a guy who had a punch in the nose.
Okay.
And he came and said, oh, I want you to do my nose because it's very wide, but I like my new profile. Because he had a very, very big hump.
Okay.
And the punch corrected it.
Okay.
And so we went into the surgery together with my father. And then we wanted to see what happened. And the septum, cartilaginous septum, had fractured and overlapped.
Wow. Okay.
So my father told, why don't we do this on purpose?
Yes.
So we start doing, and the first case was were horrible because they began to be very wide because it was like a punch. Supposed to be this way. We went to the septum, cut it, and overlapped it. And after the 10th case, then it began to look very nice afterwards.
Wow. And then when did you, or did you ever get to the point where instead of overlapping the septum, you actually cut a part of the septum away and you let those two pieces lie straight on each other again?
Oh yes. The first case we did, we overlapped and I said, oh, no good. Then we took a piece off.
Yeah.
Right in the first case.
That's fascinating. But it's so interesting to know. So this is 25 years ago. So now, okay, so you're reducing the septum, but what about the lateral walls then? How did you initially, when this was starting, treat the lateral walls?
The big challenge was to get the guts to do the lateral undermining from the upper lateral from the nasal bones.
Okay.
It took a lot of courage because every book you got said you don't touch this area.
The lateral keystone area.
Yes.
Okay.
This was the problem. This was terrible because we couldn't touch it. And then we got the courage and we did it. And then after this, everything was okay.
Wow. Okay, so but that's interesting for me now, because I know Goxall has described the ballerina maneuver. Is this almost a bit like with what Miguel tried to describe what you guys had done before, the same or not?
No, I don't see this way, because the ballerina maneuver, you get from the posterior portion and you go dissecting to the anterior portion,
okay,
and you keep the keystone area attached.
Yes.
For the cartilaginous push down, exactly the opposite. We start with the keystone area and we go laterally.
I understand. Okay.
So we go incrementally. Like if you don't want, like in a male, you don't want to lower too much the nose, you keep a little bit attached on the border and the sides.
Yeah.
So you must take care not to release everything altogether at the same time. So he goes from one side to the front, and we go from the front to the back side.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. Okay, and now in terms of your general technique of teaching and operating, are you doing a lot of endonasal work? Are you doing more open approach to the nose? Where do you work it?
Oh, it's a good question. In Brazil, we have a strange situation because the skin is very heavy, and the cartilages of the tip are very weak.
Yeah.
So we tend to open more than I would like.
Yeah.
Every time we can do close, of course, and the nasal, it's faster, heals faster, but we cannot do in all patients.
Mm.
We have, I make a joke that it's the food the Brazilians eat, because we have this patient, all these patients that have, the four grandparents are Italian, for example, and they still have this weakness on the middle crura right below the domus.
Yes.
It's very flimsy. So it's a place that we can treat it close, of course, but if you open it, it's much better to treat.
Yeah.
So I open almost 40 to 70% of the cases.
Yeah. So a topic I've been discussing with a lot of the people on the podcast lately is like the mental aspect of rhinoplasty. And a few things that I'm interested to know is, How do you look after your own mental well-being as to for you to be remain as healthy and happy and focused when at times you have difficult patients to treat, but it's also quite a busy job? I mean, you've got residents you've got to teach, you traveling the world, that kind of stuff.
Oh, this is a very important question. After this COVID pandemic, I changed everything.
Yeah.
I'm almost doing this. I take off on Fridays. I do not work on Fridays.
Beautiful.
So I get to serve Friday, Saturday, and Sundays.
So we have an Afrikaans, we speak in South Africa, we say, Vrydag is my dag. Friday is my day.
Yes, it's a good concept. No, but the thing is that I made some financial planning for the clinic, for the employees and everything, and we did the math. And we have certain amount of surgery we must achieve during the month. It's not like, and we did this calculation and then we can.
That's brilliant, eh? Wow. So you plan your rest. Like we used to plan that as well.
Yes.
You first plan your big event and your rest, and then you fill in the rest.
Yes.
Wow, eh?
Sure. Of course, there are months that we work more and some work less, but...
Okay, so now another question for the audience, as it were, is what advice would you give them in terms of dealing with difficult patients? I'm not saying technically a difficult operation, because that you have to learn and you've got to... But mentally, like body dysmorphia or something like that, how would you go about that?
Yeah, I think, I don't know in South Africa, but we as plastic surgeons, I don't know, in EAT also, we lack this kind of training, like in the psychiatry's aspect of the patient. And it's good to be able to diagnose some beforehand.
Yeah.
And even with the training, like sometimes you escape. Like I had one patient 5 years ago that had a dysmorphia, very severe. It was very intelligent person.
Yeah.
And thank God it went well, but I had a very hard 6 months.
Really, eh?
All returns.
So, well, I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm also happy to hear that because it's hard. I at times, to tell you completely honestly, sometimes I just want to stop doing what I do because you only need one difficult patient.
Yes.
You can have everybody else who's happy and you're happy, and then you get this one person who can ruin your life.
Yeah, it's terrible. But... I should have seen before I did the surgery on her. She was very difficult because she was like a dentist and she had all her parents were doctors and she knew how to speak and she drove me and said, I don't care how much I'm going to look after the surgery. I just want this and this correct. I said, I can correct this and this.
Yeah.
And then after the surgery, everything changed. So, but looking backwards, she gave a little, some signs of this problem.
You should have
I didn't catch it.
Hindsight is an exact science. Okay, she had a last little topic to chat about before we go and listen to some more of these lectures is social media and rhinoplasty. What are some of your thoughts around that?
Oh, this changed the world. Mm-hmm. I think we can... The pandemic and the Instagram in Brazil, at least, it changed everything. Because we usually receive the patients that came from our colleagues and other patients.
Mm.
And now there's sometimes knocks on your door some patient that you've never seen before from other countries still. They get you on Instagram.
Yeah.
And this, you must be very, very cautious because nobody knows this patient. So you need to interview and talk more.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Like it globalized the people and the surgeons. I think it's not... We need to adapt, but I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great, eh? Listen, I so enjoy your energy. I really... It's amazing to be around how excited, enthusiastic you are about life. And it's a good thing, man. You teach and you're there and you're operating. And I know that you giving a lot in Brazil, but we want to try and bring you into on the world as well. And we've spoken a little bit about this. The first time I'm mentioning it on the podcast, but we're doing World Rhinoplasty Day next year.
Oh, this will be great.
Yeah, yeah. So guys, you're going to watch this space, but Ishida and I are working with a couple of other guys, and we're going to really try and put something very special together for next year. And hopefully we're going to get you to South Africa.
Oh, I hope so. Then I can get to dive with sharks again.
Guys, thank you so much for listening. We're going to cut it off here and head off to listen to some really interesting talks. But thank you for listening. And Ishida, thank you so much for taking time off to come and chat and just share your pearls of wisdom.
Oh, thank you for having me, Cameron. Nice to be here.
Awesome. Guys, come back next week for another episode.